You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. Central District Health says a local high school student has been diagnosed with tuberculosis. You heard that right, tuberculosis. Health officials say the student attends Centennial High School and the department is investigating and sending letters to anyone who may have had close contact. Officials say there is no ongoing risk for contracting the bacterial infection at the school and that most people who are exposed don't actually become infected. The health department says three of the five tuberculosis cases in Idaho last year were in Ada County. So here today to talk about this, as well as the latest COVID news and other public health issues, is Dr. David Pate. He is the former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and a current member of Idaho's Coronavirus Task Force. And remember, if you do have a question, send us an email, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Hi, Dr. Pate.
Hi, Gemma.
Okay, so first, Dr. Pate, can you just explain for us what tuberculosis is? And I know that might be a silly question, but this is, again, one of those diseases that we just don't see very often anymore.
No, you're right. And so it's not silly at all. Most people probably have very little knowledge about tuberculosis. So tuberculosis is a disease that has been around for a very long time. We had a real problem with it in the late 80s and into the early 2000s, but we have taken a lot of public health measures that have resulted in the fact that today most people know very little about tuberculosis. And we don't, as you said, we don't see that many cases. I think in Idaho last year, I think we had five cases. So it's certainly not a very common disease. This disease is caused by a bacteria, but it's a very unusual kind of bacteria called a mycobacterium. And there's a number of different forms of it. This is unlike most of the bacteria that your listeners will be aware of, where we have these common antibiotics, penicillins and such that we use to treat them. This kind of bacteria is requires very specialized antibiotics, antibiotics most people have never heard of. And we generally have to treat with multiple antibiotics of these specialized kind because this bacteria can easily develop resistance if you do not treat it with the right antibiotics and for the right amount of time. This bacteria is spread in the air through somebody being sick, generally with tuberculosis in their lungs. And there's a number of different ways that it can be in the lungs, and and that can determine how contagious the person is. But generally, when somebody has active TB, as opposed to something we call latent, which is not going to be transmitted to other people, but when it's active, generally it's through the person coughing, speaking, singing, yelling, sneezing, other things, just like we talked about with COVID and some other things, where you're ejecting aerosols into the air and infecting people that are in close contact with you. And so the greatest risk is going to be to those people who were in close contact, particularly indoors. And unlike COVID, that is very highly transmissible, tuberculosis is much less and usually requires you to be around that person for in a relatively close proximity and for extended periods of time. But obviously, with a student attending classes, high school classes are probably different because you're probably moving around class to class and so forth, whereas in lower grades, you're probably in the same classroom with the same students. So that would be a greater risk when you're around somebody in close proximity and then for long periods of time, that's going to increase your risk.
So Dr. Pate, is it true that it can be tough to get rid of TB? And I ask that because, I mean, you know, the when I think of tuberculosis, I think of these movies, right, back from the, that were set in the 1800s, and people were coughing and had their handkerchiefs and they're coughing up blood and they had to be isolated. And I mean, it just seems like something so of the past, but I mean, it is definitely still here. But is it difficult to get rid of it?
Well, it can be. The key is recognizing that somebody has it. Because first of all, as I said, people can have latent tuberculosis. And that is probably what, you know, I have probably seen more of that in my medical career than I have active, although I've certainly seen active cases. Latent is when you get exposed to tuberculosis, but many people's immune system is pretty effective at walling it off, so to speak, containing it. And so it doesn't, your immune system doesn't get rid of the TB, but it contains it, and in such a way that the person is not sick and also not contagious. What the problem is that later on, if that person becomes very ill or immunocompromised, and certainly more likely as they move on in age, that latent tuberculosis can now become active. And when it's active, then that's typically when you see the things that you reported, but when it's been not treated for a long period. If it's active, what people will do is they'll feel sick. They may have fever, night sweats, chest pain, coughing up phlegm, or even coughing up blood. And so in those cases, if somebody seeks medical attention, then we'll generally get it, you know, diagnosis, and then we can start the person on these multiple antibiotic treatments. And unlike common bacterial infections, we have to treat these people for many months, often more than half a year. And the good news is if we get them on effective treatment, then generally after 2 weeks of treatment, even though they have to continue being treated to get rid of the tuberculosis, they'll no longer be contagious. They won't be spreading it anymore. Mm. The cases like what you described, where we typically see that is in less developed countries, okay, in poor populations in the United States. You can see that in homeless people. You can see it in other people that don't have access to medical care. So we don't see that nearly as common these days.
So, Dr. Payne, how concerned should parents be if they have children going to Centennial High School in Boise?
Well, you know, it's hard for me to answer without more information about this child, as I think it was a high school student, as I understand.
Correct.
So the question is, did he have, is this a bit of an overreaction because he had latent tuberculosis? My guess is if they're going to all these lengths to notify so many people, I'm assuming he did have I don't know whether it was a boy or a girl, did have active TB. If we assume it's active TB, you know, my next question would be, how sick was this person? Because if they were, you know, coughing all the time and people were just, you know, not making a fuss about it, because, you know, these days we see people coughing all around us, you know, was it kind of ignored and he was coughing? What kinds of activities was this person involved in that might have led to really close contact for a long time? Was this person producing phlegm? Another important consideration is, where did this person get the TB? Is this a refugee? Is this somebody who had a lot of international travel? Because there are some more serious forms of tuberculosis that you know, can be much more difficult to treat because they've already developed a lot of drug resistance. So, you know, I would need a lot of questions answered to be able to tell you that. I would say, without knowing any details and just making inferences from what's been said, I would assume the greatest concern would be for people that were in this person's classes, the teacher and students in the classrooms with this person. And then I would be looking at activities. Was this person involved in band, sports, choir, those kind of things? And then there might be some additional people there. Did this person have a boyfriend or girlfriend? That person, it could likely be more risk. Was this person carpooling regularly with somebody else? Those people could be at increased risk. So I just, there's a lot more details I would need to know, including, you know, what kinds of enhancements, if any, has Centennial High School made to their ventilation and filtration systems? You know, if they had high air exchanges per hour, if they had HEPA or MERV 13 filtration, if they had UV light treatments, and my guess is they didn't, because I didn't see many schools avail themselves of these opportunities with COVID. But if they did, that would actually significantly lower the risk. So lots of questions, and hard for me to give you a concrete answer.
Mm-hmm. I want to switch gears now, Dr. Payne, and I want to talk about a study that recently came out that confirms what some folks have suspected for a while now. Can you talk about this particular COVID side effect that the study says spares no one and can have lifelong implications for people?
Yeah, this year we have, because we've had now the opportunity to follow a lot of COVID patients for up to a year or so after their infections. And, you know, we are continuing to find concerning findings. And we've had a series of those this year. You know, this one that you're referring to found out and showed. Now, this was, a lot of these studies are done on VA populations. And the reason they're done on VA populations is because we have lots of people in and a common electronic health record, which makes it easy to pull data. So I first cautioned that when you're dealing with the VA, you're going to overwhelmingly be dealing with men. So it's hard to know, do these same correlations apply to women? And they're typically people that are more middle-aged and older. So I don't know that this applies to children, but this study showed that even a year out after COVID, and even if you felt like you had a really mild case, your risks of a number of cardiovascular events, and I'm talking about heart failure, arrhythmia, heart attacks, strokes, blood clots and blood clots to the lungs, they typically at least doubled over what they would have been if they had not been infected during that year, that whole year after COVID. And we've certainly seen some instances of some high-profile people that had COVID were still pretty young, and we would not have expected them to die. And then months later, we've heard of them having sudden death.
Right. Yeah. There were quite a few cases of that, Dr. Pate. So then there's a new report out that also says Omicron was not as mild as people may have thought it was.
Yeah. You know, a number of us cringed when the Omicron wave was hitting, and people started calling it milder. And it was understandable, because there is a difference between Omicron and what we had just gone through with Delta with respect to this virus and a trait called fusogenicity, which I won't get into. But really what that means is how likely you are to get the really bad pneumonia, you know, beyond the breathing machines in the ICU, which we were used to back in 20 and 2021. Because we are seeing less of this, because Omicron is less fusogenic, people were calling it milder. What that failed to recognize is that COVID is so much more than a pulmonary disease. It really is a systemic disease that involves the vascular system particularly. And so what happened is, after all this time of calling Omicron mild and people really abandoning caution in large numbers, what we now can look at going back is, if you adjust the population so that you can compare people in a fair way back to Delta, and that is that you account for the fact that we've had more people get vaccinated and infected, and when you can control for comorbidities and things like that, when you make those adjustments, it turns out just as many people died per 100,000 as with Delta, and just as many people were hospitalized as did with Delta. And in fact, you will remember that we talked just about a year ago this time, as we were getting Omicron, that it ended up, we faced two situations in Idaho where our hospitals got overwhelmed and we had to go on crisis standards of care, and that was Omicron.
Before we get to questions, I do want to quickly talk about any potential risk that we may see from changes that we'll see in China's COVID policies.
Yeah, I think that what we're seeing is, you know, people were very critical of China's policy. I think it was no doubt harsh. On the other hand, they may win out if, in fact, we do determine that there's a lot of long-term health consequences, because they potentially avoided them. But I think where China has messed up is, it makes sense to protect the population until you have effective vaccines. China has a very big aversion to the mRNA vaccines, which frankly would be a lot more effective than what they used and would have helped protect their population. They actually have very little of their population vaccinated, which is a real mistake, because now, understandably, people are fed up. They're protesting. There are certainly thoughts that the government is going to have to change its zero COVID policy. They're starting to use what we just talked about in the last segment, this misstatement that Omicron is milder. So it looks like they might be trying to build a case why they can say they would ease up on this. But they have to be very careful, because if you release that society all of a sudden, and now we have these new subvariants that are much more immune evasive, they could overwhelm their hospital systems. And of course, that has worldwide implications because of the economic effects, as well as we learned a long time ago how dependent we are on so many products for them. So what I hope that they will do is announce a change in policy, but say that that has to be phased in. They've got to do widespread vaccination and take precautions, do it in a graded way so they can watch to see if they're starting to put pressure on their health systems and all, but they do have to do something. I just hope they don't change it all at once, because it could be disastrous both for China and the world.
Mm-hmm. So Dr. Payne, I want to get to at least one or two questions before we have to get going. And this comes from Alex. And I don't think we have seen quite this situation before, Dr. Payne. So Alex writes, two friends will be arriving at the Boise airport Thursday, having just tested positive for COVID. They only have mild symptoms. There doesn't appear to be any good way to get them from the airport to their house. So what I'm thinking is, I'm going to get them in my car, double mask, all the windows open, and then test myself after 3 days and keep mostly clear of others until then. We are all vaccinated and double boosted. I had a short but intense bout of COVID in June. Do you have any comment on this approach?
Yeah, the listener has properly identified this is going to be very risky if these individuals have just tested positive. I'm assuming with a rapid test, which would correlate with the likelihood that they're infectious. And, you know, certainly what we'd want to do is get them into a hotel or someplace where they can isolate. You know, the challenge is in transporting them since we don't have a hotel right there at the airport. I think she's probably doing the right thing. You know, what I would absolutely do is make sure that whoever is going to be driving them is fully vaccinated with and up to date on their vaccines. Make sure that everyone in that car is wearing a very well-fitting N95 mask or better. Make sure there are no gaps. Make sure it's being worn properly. Have the, all those windows down. Make the don't talk. Make the trip as quick as possible. Then she's right to then probably you know, quarantine herself and test with rapid antigen tests every other day, every 48 hours for at least three times. So that would be over 6 days before deciding she has not been infected.
And Dr. Pate, Alicia writes in saying, I have a toddler who's too young to wear a mask and attends daycare. Is there still a point for parents to mask when your child is going to likely be exposed anyway? Her daycare has good sick policies and we keep her home when sick, but obviously viruses go around anyway.
Well, yeah, that's absolutely true. Yes, there is a great benefit in continuing to mask, even if you have a child in school that is going to be potentially in school infected or daycare or whatever. And the reason is your risks are cumulative. Certainly, if the child gets infected and they're too young to be wearing a mask, then obviously that's going to be a risk to you. But so is everybody else. You have probably just as much risk of you being exposed through work, grocery store, whatever kind of activities they're doing, if not masking, and then actually infecting the child. And frankly, it's easier to tell when you're sick than it is to tell when a toddler who is in daycare is sick, because they may not complain of symptoms and they may not look sick. So yes, great benefit in continuing to mask right now.
Well, as always, Dr. Pate, we so appreciate your time with us and so much to cover today, including this latest case of tuberculosis. So really appreciate your time and your expertise.
Thanks, Gemma.
Absolutely. We've been talking with Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force. Remember, if you have questions about public health, you can send us an email, idahomatters@boisestate.edu, and we will get to those questions next week. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
Experiencing the news each day can feel like a journey. With Up First from NPR, it doesn't have to be. Welcome to 15 easy minutes of breaking news, clarity on international and national affairs, all handed over not from some floating voice in the sky, from us, Layla, A, Steve, and me, Rachel. Start your day informed. Subscribe to Up First wherever you get your podcasts.